You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Victor, and joining me today is Matt Sefton. And Matt Sefton is an engineer who is a former technical evangelist for Apple. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that means and what his perspective is on some of the news coming out of WWDC 2016.
Cool.
Matt, go ahead and introduce yourself properly, because I've done a very terrible job of it.
I think that was fine, Victor. My name's Matt, a former Apple technology evangelist. And Victor, you just asked me a moment ago what exactly that means. And I was talking about the fact that over in the UK, we don't really use the term evangelist or evangelism very much at all. But I think it's a bigger thing over in the States. Whenever I'd introduce myself in meetings, it would always raise a smile or a giggle or two and get things off to a good start. As you mentioned also earlier on, the first evangelist at Apple was Guy Kawasaki. I had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of years ago, actually. Thoroughly nice guy. And I think most teams within Apple will have access to an evangelist. Within the corporation, we would focus on specific areas of the business. So for me, that was web technologies, advertising technologies, and related tools. But you know, other people that I know may specialize in graphics technologies or games technologies, etc., etc.
And is that an outward facing role to try and spread the word about those sort of technologies to people outside of Apple, or is it trying to champion them inside? What's that?
It's both, actually. So, the obvious meaning of the word is to you know, sing and praise a particular thing. So, I would take the word of the technology and out to businesses, agencies, brands, and so on, and also internally for the teams that I supported internally, I would use my expertise and the area of knowledge that I was focusing on to help them do their jobs better as well.
And advertising is an interesting one, because Apple had the iAd platform, mm-hmm. which is now, I think, discontinued.
That's right. Yeah, well, I think part of it is, I think the news broke in January about the network side of things being winding down around about now. Maybe the end of the month. It goes on still in news, and I imagine the recently announced search ads product goes some way to being a continuation of what those guys were doing.
Okay. Now, let's get to it, because the event, and I rewatched the keynote yesterday afternoon, was just a very large event. It was packed full of stuff. Let's unpack that a little bit for me, will you?
Cool. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a bit of a shame that I wasn't there this year. I would have liked to have seen the new venue. To fit that many people in one room is something that I feel that has been needed for quite a while. That would have been nice to see. And then obviously the sheer amount of information they packed into those 2 hours and the pace at which they covered everything off, for me, was astonishing to see. It just felt like they'd really hit their stride, and it's just brilliant to see it.
Yeah. And the pace of it was kind of staggering for me, because if you didn't pay attention, you would miss these little one-liners that went by. And they were things like the fact that the Notes application, both for iOS and for macOS, I expect, is now a collaborative application.
Yeah.
You can have multiple people working in a note at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. You know, and I wasn't aware of anything that was going to be talked about in the conference. But on the flip side, I had to rewatch it to catch things like that, because it passed me by on the first listen.
Yeah, they're just one-liners thrown in there. And by the way, it's collaborative. And then he goes on to the next thing. And you know, I'm scratching my head saying, how many of these things are in here? you know, that and, we missed.
That's
right?
it. You know, taking screenshots of those slides where it has 100 different technologies scattered around the screen, you know, just to try and get a quick glimpse of or a peek at what might be coming up later on in the week.
Oh yeah, we've posted those screen grabs on the Apple Insider website,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah, that's right.
I was looking at them and trying to figure out because one of the things that I'm personally interested in is HomeKit.
Mm.
I have many HomeKit devices in my house. I like them very much, and looking at that, you know, they have HomeKit air conditioners listed and they have HomeKit accessories listed.
Mm.
And I don't know if HomeKit accessories refers to the same kind of products that I'm using today or something different.
Mm.
And, you know, we classically think when we're talking about aircon, we talk about the thermostat because that's what controls the user interface to the aircon.
Mm-hmm.
But they've listed air conditioners separately and called it out like that.
Interesting.
You know, I don't know if they're talking about HomeKit compatible window air conditioners or something else. The other thing that was really intriguing to me was that they showed four home builders that they said are building HomeKit right into homes.
Okay.
So now I've got to ring up a builder and start finding out what on earth they're building.
Yeah, maybe we should all buy new houses so we can get that in straight off the bat.
I think we must.
Yeah. Another one that that jumped out at me, and again, it was a kind of small point in the initial keynote and State of the Union presentation, but as we can see through the week, that more and more information has been discovered and learned about it in sessions, is the new file system coming from Apple. You know, the real nerdy side of me can't wait to take a look at that and see how it lines up against HFS.
And I'll be interested to hear what you have to say about it, because you know, we've been watching Apple explore file systems for some time now. They had HFS and HFS Plus, and then they added journaling. And then they brought over the fellow whose name escapes me, forgive me, but he's the fellow who was in charge of the BFS file system at B.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I'm not aware of him, actually.
And, well, I'll find him in a moment. But there was also the exploration with ZFS for a while, or ZFS, as you'd say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember reading, even as an Apple employee, reading John Syracuse's monstrous tomes reviewing each version of OS X. And I know for a while he was a real supporter that a new file system was needed. I did see a photograph of him taken at DubDub at the moment he found out that a new file system was actually arriving.
Yeah. And I haven't seen that photo, but it was the end of an era when he stopped putting together those tomes of summaries of the new operating systems.
It really was kind of freed up a little bit of time in my life, but I would much rather still had him around doing that.
Yeah. I think it was Dominic Giampolo who went over to Apple to the file system.
Okay.
I'm not entirely positive, but I think that's correct. Mm. But there, for a while, it looked as if we were going to get ZFS as the file system, and then we didn't. Yeah. Dominic Giampolo is the person who developed the B file system for B operating system, and he's currently at Apple.
Right. I mean, the ZFS news, you know, I think that was actually – I was at Apple for 3 years, and I think that was all being talked about before I started at Apple. So I'm familiar with those rumors, that's for sure.
Yeah. So the point of the new file system, we may as well talk about it, is that everything is faster, everything is more secure, and it's a 64-bit file system, so you can have a lot larger number of files.
I think the number begins with
one of the
Q.
Things,
although I can't pronounce it, quintillion, something like that, yeah.
It's a very large number with very and large capitalized. But one of the things that I think is interesting is we know that Apple has a sincere focus on privacy, and they aren't afraid to express that. And I believe this file system allows for individual file-level encryption.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, I mean, I've not finished reading about it, but in a nutshell, I think that it's just a more modern file system is automatically, straight away, going to be a lot more relevant, a lot more, as you say, performant and secure. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm going to install on my test machine, Sierra, just to have a poke around and see what that's capable of. But just the fact that it's based on the modern technology we have in computers, that, you know, SSD drives, rather than HFS, which has been around, I think, 18 or so years and was invented.
Oh, no, it's longer than that.
Longer than that? Okay. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's crazy, isn't it, that we've been using it for so long?
Well, the original HFS came from 1985.
Wow. Okay.
And HFS Plus followed on much later.
Yeah, I think that's 18 years ago, that one. Mm-hmm. So I think to take advantage of solid-state storage, there are a lot of things that the file system would have to do today that those older file systems were kind of coaxed into doing. So I think a fresh start is, for me, overdue, and also I think quite a lot of work must have gone into it to get it to a position where it's actually you know, ready for a beta, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I've watched and was interested in, but am somewhat concerned about, was the notion that Apple wants to move my old files into the cloud.
Mm.
Right? And it's file system related, but it's also cloud services related. And they mentioned that this was going to be a possibility, that besides synchronizing files across everyone's desktops or computers, as it were, that the old files would be taken to the cloud to reserve space on the laptop.
Sure. You know, if you've ever done any kind of IT support or Mac help with any of your family, you'll know that more often than not, the computers are, you know, kind of tight on space, or they've got lots of duplicate files or unused files hanging around. And
you're being generous.
I think one of the favorite times, at least with some of my family, one of the favorite pastimes is to reorganize things, try and regain a bit of space here and there. You only have to look on the charts in the Mac App Store to see that more often than not, the top of either the free or the paid chart is more often than not an app that is there to help people try and regain space on their computers. So for that to become a system level technology, you know, it's only going to be better for the user in the end. And I think that was one of the prevailing topics of what was announced in the keynote, is there was so much being done in these new versions of everything that is just to make people's lives easier and to have them spend the time on their computer in a fun way rather than carrying out administrative tasks or maintenance.
So let me ask, what really stood out to you? What spoke to you as one of the key things that came out of this keynote?
I think for me, there's a kind of seam running through all of the operating systems, all four platforms, but mainly iOS and macOS, where extensions are now going to be used to kind of widen the remit of an app. You know, you might think that the App Store has been along for several years now, and apps perhaps over time can do enough, but maybe reached a kind of time where it's maybe plateaued a little bit in terms of the technologies. I mean, of course, Apple release new APIs and technologies every year. But for me this year, with extensions being everywhere almost, whether that's providing an interface in iMessage on iOS or inside of Maps to provide driving directions and those types of things. For me, that's just a real moment for app developers to gain control of more of the operating system than their kind of siloed app can do anyway. I think we'll be seeing some really cool stuff with this, definitely.
Yeah. And do you recommend that our listeners wait until the fall when things are released, or do you recommend that they become daring and participate in the beta programs? What's your take on that?
Well, personally, I would only ever install it on a test device, because it is a beta test version of the operating system. Some people I can understand maybe can't wait. I took a look on Twitter late last night, and there were a few people who perhaps had obtained the beta through less reputable means. Maybe, you know, they got friends to sign them into their developer account and got a hold of it that way. But they obviously hadn't seen the web page where you download it themselves, where there's a big warning saying that you have to install Xcode 8 on your Mac if you're going to do the update through iTunes, otherwise it won't work. So lots of people complaining of the error that gives you when you don't do that. I think the easier way is to do it with the over-the-air update. Absolutely. You know, I'm lucky enough to have a test device. If people don't have test devices, I think at this point, if you do put it on your device, it's you have to understand that it is a work in progress and certain things are missing, as the release notes say, and some things won't work. But on the whole, on my test device, it's probably the most stable first beta of an iOS that I've ever seen.
Really? That's...
I mean, given the things that have been flagged as known to be missing and known to be not working, other than those things, it's pretty neat. I mean, it looks great as well.
Wow. Now, one of the things that I noticed in some of the release notes was that, or at least some of the coverage of some of the release notes, I should say, is the idea that Apple is pushing for HTTPS and current SSL certificates at web servers. Mm. And that it occurs to me that one of the knock-on effects of that is that if you're an application that goes out and pulls images from all over the internet, like a Twitter app or another app that does that kind of behavior, that you're going to end up viewing necessarily a lot of blank spots because Apple's pushing this encryption now.
Sure. I mean...
And I should say the reason they're doing that is because they want for a more secure internet. It's
absolutely
not because they're being mean.
No, of course not. I mean, it makes absolute sense. This kind of transport security has been around for a while, actually, a couple of years on Mac OS, or what we're now calling Mac OS anyway. So for it to come to iOS, if that is the case, then it's about time, really. You know, there are, in the developer's documentation, you can read about ways to configure that technology so it does give you access to certain, perhaps disables it for certain servers if you really need it to. So there are ways and means around that. But to use it on the main part of your application is definitely a good thing. You know, and secure certificates for servers now, there are lots of initiatives to bring down the cost of those. Especially for small developers, there is initiatives where you can essentially get those things for free.
Now, I know I promised that I wouldn't ambush you with any questions, but I'm going to ask, and you can tell me no.
Sure.
Is there an anecdote you can relate about your time at Apple and some of the challenges that you faced there? I understand if the answer is no, I can't talk about that, but I'd like to hear if you've got one.
Anecdotes. Let me have a think and we'll come back to that, but I'll definitely give you an answer to that.
All right. What of the keynote really struck you? What really resonated with you?
I think the bit that resonated the most for me was it started strong. It started with, for me, the platform that needed the most attention or needed to go off first, which was watchOS. Definitely some amazing changes in watchOS. And I think for me, as an Apple Watch user, those changes are all the right changes to make my life with the watch easier and more performant, simpler, more familiar with the kind of interactions that have come across from iOS. So I think that was the bit that really made me kind of nod my head and kind of say, finally.
Yeah, I've got an Apple Watch and I don't wear it very frequently. It just wasn't sticky with me, and I think that was because the idea of notifications on the wrist is something that I can get through a Pebble or an Intel Basis or one of the others, and works just fine. And
so
the activity
the Apple,
was good, but good.
Yeah, before the Apple Watch came out, were you a regular watch wearer? I'm interested to know.
Mixed off and on.
Okay.
I will go through bouts where I will wear a traditional mechanical wristwatch for a couple of weeks and then switch to something else. And I have a couple of mechanicals that I rotate through. I have two of the I have the original Pebble and the Pebble Steel and an Intel Basis. And the Intel Basis was actually one of the best of them.
Okay.
The Basis Peak is not a bad piece of hardware. Very good heart rate measurement, very good with notifications, and especially being able to dismiss all notifications quickly. Where if you weren't aware of 3D touch and what that interaction is like on the watch, on the Basis Peak, it's just simply double tap the screen and it dismisses all of the notifications.
Nice.
Right? With the watch, you have to intentionally tap and then push harder. And
I'd be interested to try out the new mechanisms for getting at that on Apple Watch. I think you're going back a little bit. You're almost the same as me in that I historically have worn, I don't know whether I'd call them mechanical watches, quartz watches.
Traditional watches.
Yeah, traditional watches. But with an analog face and, that kind of dance you have to do every month or two to move the date on, which is still what I do when I wear my old style analog watches. I have, a Scandinavian watch that I love to wear and a Swiss watch that I love to wear. And I still wear them every now and again because they look so good. And I'm a stickler for good design, so there we go.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to send me pictures of your watches now.
All right, well, it's already on my Instagram, I think, but happy to do so. I think that's probably or at least from the people I've talked to, they're always the toughest nuts to crack in terms of watch usage are the people who have traditionally worn watches and kind of fallen in love with those traditional watches, which was definitely both of us by the sounds of things. And I think for me to wear my Apple Watch more than I do now would be this new software and the promises that come with that would definitely be difficult to say no to.
Yeah. One of the things that I noticed in the watch update was, well, there were two things that really caught my ear. And one of them was that when they showed sort of the app switching view of it, it looked, I thought that I heard a reference to calling that a dock, which seemed unusual to me.
Mm. Yeah, I heard the same thing. So, I mean, I've actually not tried it yet because I only have one watch and I'm not willing to put the beta on there. But
well, it's a knock-on effect. You have to have iOS 10 running on a phone device, and also, so you have to have a spare phone and a spare watch.
Yeah, that's it. So I'm going to try and dive into the simulator and see how far I can go with that. Obviously, the experience won't be quite as nice, but it at least might let me take a look at those new features of the software.
Yeah. One of the things that I saw that really caught my attention was the ability to view other people's activity rings.
Yeah, great.
And challenge yourselves, right? You know, traditionally we've had that with the likes of Fitbit and Jawbone Up, and Up has really done a very good job of it. One of the better jobs. And I participated in those kinds of challenges, and most recently I had one where I had a Jawbone Up challenge going with some friends, and I sort of dropped out of it when they fell off. And the idea of having the rings going and having everyone's rings there, in addition to the reminders to breathe and the reminders to get up and move, does work for me. It does resonate with me.
Yeah, I think that kind of social aspect of the watch and even the kind of social aspect to messages that's also kind of collaborative. I don't know if you watched the messages demo in, I think it was the State of the Union, platform State of the Union address. I could send you a picture and you can modify that and send it back to me. So that kind of social collaboration, we talked about notes earlier on as well. I think that's just society these days. You know, we want to help each other out. We want to,
it's make each other society. Laugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, people who listen to the podcast know that I'm a big fan of Apple Pay. I don't know. You're in England, so you've got it for Oyster Card and you've got it for some retailers. But how widespread is it for you?
Well, it's pretty much everywhere because even before Apple Pay, we had contactless payments. Most banks would give you a debit or a credit card with a chip embedded in the NFC chip that would let you do these kind of contactless payments. So already we were using those kind of payments. Apple Pay just kind of made that easier. Because there was no card anymore, just one device that you've got with you at all times. Then when the watch came along, even easier. My wife loves to use her Apple Watch to pay when she gets on public transport because we've just had a baby, so she's pushing the pram around. the fact that she doesn't have to go into her bag or go into her pocket, she can just swipe the watch to make that payment and get on the transport, is a real time saver for her.
Yeah. One of the things that I was looking for and I was hoping to see but did not see was, we saw when they were showing us the messages demo that you could use extensions and, for example, pay someone with Square Cash. Mm. And in my experience, I suppose in San Francisco and in San Jose and those areas, that Square Cash has a large amount of adoption and people don't mind doing it, or they use Venmo or things like that. I live in a part of America where that hasn't caught on.
Yeah, we do. We don't have PayPal over thing. Here. PayPal, of course, is everywhere. Square.
I'm looking for Apple Pay to beat PayPal. I want to be able to send people transactions via messages using Apple Pay.
Absolutely, that would be awesome.
We're not there yet. I don't know why.
Rome wasn't built in a day, I don't think.
Come on.
I saw a really interesting tweet actually about somebody complained that maybe watchOS, how it is with version 3 that's just been announced, is maybe how it should have been when it was launched. And Fraser Spears, who's a Scottish guy, he's a real iPad advocate and works in one of the schools up in Scotland that has one iPad per pupil. He came back with a really good...
Cedars, I think it is.
Okay, yeah. He came back with a really great remark in that, that's like expecting somebody to be born an adult. Which really made me laugh, and it's the same thing. Yeah, it would be a great world if watchOS came out as mature as it is with version 3 on day one, but that's just not how software development works.
We all expect that if you put 9 women on a job, you can have a child in 1 month.
Yeah,
To Fraser's point, to Mr. Spears' point, honeybees are born fully sized adults.
That's interesting.
Why can't iOS be done?
True, and actually, the human babies are one of the most immature when they're born, actually, as well. So, both ends of the spectrum covered off there.
Yeah, there you have it, Apple Insider listeners. We have
biology and genealogy on an Apple technology podcast.
The Apple podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So you asked me earlier on about a tale to tell. I mean, I think one of the most fun tales, and I do know this is true, but I don't really know where these kind of stories start. I mean, I have firsthand knowledge of certain people involved in the story, but this is to do with the box for the iPhone. One of my old former colleagues and friends, Tom Crabtree, who now runs a design studio called Manual Creative in San Francisco. He worked on the original box at Apple as part of a small team. And the story goes that he designed an amazing looking box, a kind of like monolith. And then there was a second box designed, which had a lovely picture of the phone on top. And these boxes were shown to Steve Jobs. And Steve looked at them both. So the story goes, and looked at this monolithic box and proclaimed that it was the most beautiful box he'd ever seen, which I'm sure he didn't say lightly. And he said, however, I'm going to take this second box, the one with the picture on the front, because that shows the buyer exactly what they're getting. But now I think the sweet irony is that the box for the 6 and the 6S is pretty much... that monolithic box, although in white rather than black. So I think that's kind of sweet irony that that beautiful box did actually come to exist.
Yeah, and I love it when those things do come true. We don't always get it delivered on the first one, like you're saying about the watch. But if we get it eventually, that's good enough.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you, Matt, very much for participating with me today. Can you tell me where people can find you on the internet? What's Twitter? What's your Instagram? Where should we look for those pictures of your watches?
Absolutely. So you can find everything. My Twitter is GingerBeardMan, which is only slightly embarrassing, but I've had it for so long I can't bear to change it. And my web address is the same as well. And there's a whole bunch of links off there to Medium, where I'm currently... trying to brush up my writing skills by writing about my thoughts on Dub. And it talks about, what I'm up to now in my days after Apple, which is basically the same kind of things that I was doing whilst I was at Apple, but I'm now doing them for anybody who'd like to like me to work with them.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much again. This has been Matt Sefton and Victor Marks with the Apple Insider Podcast.
Thanks, Victor.
Cheers. All right. I'm going to press. So, welcome to the second portion of the Apple Insider Podcast. It's me, Victor, back with Mikey Campbell, Apple Insider editor.
What is going down?
Everything. No, this is awesome because, you know, we've got Daniel Aaron Dilger over at WWDC and he's attending the sessions and he tells me that it's like trying to drink from a fire hose, that he is overwhelmed with how many cool things are going on.
So I hear.
Yeah. And it's, you know, he's having a hard time processing it all. And one of the things that I noticed in the keynote was just how quickly things came out, features came that were almost like throwaway lines, right? They just went through them blazingly fast. I mentioned earlier when I was talking to Matt Sefton that there was one liner in the notes conversation where the presenter said, "Oh, and also notes are collaborative."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What, you can have multiple people editing notes real time? What the heck? You know, it's crazy, but it kills Evernote, which is awesome.
Yeah, I wish they brought that collaborative stuff to more iCloud apps, though. I know it's coming, but I don't know.
Look, the collaboration in Keynote and Pages and Numbers has always been a dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a tire fire at the landfill, kind of bad.
Yep. They need to bring decent iCloud integration to all their first party stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, Google mopping the floor right now.
Well, you say that, but my thought is this, right? If they've mastered how to do it for notes, then they've mastered how to do it for those other applications and simply need to bring it over. And you expect
they
will.
Have they mastered it? I haven't used it. Have you tried it out?
Well, I have not tried notes for iOS 10 yet because I have not yet updated a device of mine to iOS 10. And you really need to update 2 in order to collaborate, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the service is not even up and running yet. Who knows?
Yeah, but they've said it, and I want to believe it's going to work. Why do I want to believe it's going to work when they've had other issues in the past? Because hope springs eternal, Mikey.
Indeed.
That's just how I feel about it. What were some of the things that really struck you out of the whole keynote?
It was interesting that they spent so much time on messages. I know it's, they said it's the most used first-party app on iPhone.
I believe that.
But it seems like they're doing... I mean, there was a lot of interesting stuff, especially the third-party integration stuff was good. I'm looking forward to that.
I feel like that third-party integration stuff is potentially the most viral way of getting your app seen ever. Because if you look at the screenshot images, right, first of all, they showed you the Messages app store, right, the list of things that work there.
Yeah,
but also, when you use a third-party extension for Messages, it puts in underneath whatever graphic or thing that it puts in from the, you know, blank name app and links to the app in the App Store.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So if I send you an animated GIF of your brain exploding, for example, you can tap on that link directly beneath the animated image of your brain exploding and go get the same app and send me pictures of my animated brain exploding.
Of course, it all depends on app discovery and the iMessage app store as well.
Right, but what I'm saying is that by having that link there, when someone uses one, that fixes app discovery because you've discovered it via someone else already using it and giving you the link where to go to get it.
Yeah.
That's kind of huge.
I agree. Less huge are the full screen animations and message bubble things.
You don't like the you're not a fan of the Happy New Year?
I don't look forward to having my messages filled with animations. Maybe because I'm a curmudgeon, but I just don't. I don't know. It feels not intrusive, but I mean, it's going to be very, very animated, I feel.
Okay. So the way that this goes, right, is that it wasn't hidden or anything, right? Many, many parts of the keynote addressed users in China, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And replicating features available in other messaging apps.
Yep.
And during that demonstration, I was sitting with some people from China or people who are Americans and speak Chinese and use WeChat all the time to talk to people back in China. And for every one of those features, they said, "Oh yeah, just like WeChat. Oh yeah, that's WeChat. Yeah, WeChat does that." And so that's what Apple's doing, is bringing over those kinds of features so that people in China will adopt messages.
Yeah.
Now, I know you're Japanese, so it doesn't mean anything to you. But I'm telling you, that was the experience that I had sitting and watching the keynote with that kind of an audience.
Yeah, well, I mean, Apple always does that, though. They always borrow, quote unquote, features from other stuff. I mean, and WWDC is traditionally a place where they unveil these borrowed features. But I don't know. Some of the stuff feels a little intrusive to me, in messages, at least. Some of the stuff is good, though. Responding to other texts with those, like, kind of instant.
The sort of like responses.
Yeah. That's going to save a lot of time. And I do very much like the rich text or rich data in line with the message string. So, for example, you can view videos or, you know, other integrated graphical assets and stuff like that in line, which is also good because I hate leaving the app or switching between apps. So it's good to see Apple opening up all of their architectures. So there's a lot of cross integration going on.
There is. And, you know, it really felt interesting that they found a way to do that when they are so focused on privacy.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing something called differential privacy, which allows these things to be communicated without giving up your information. And I think I saw a quote earlier today from a university professor who said it was simply outstanding. It was the most interesting thing he's ever seen been done.
Interesting.
Being able to let me just look that up. It was the notion that he was able to do that kind of sharing and still make these things happen.
Well, I think there was an interesting session posted, or the WWDC session that they had on today, so Wednesday, talking about iOS security. It was kind of like a deep dive into all that kind of good stuff and how it forms a basis of what Apple is doing on their end, both on device and through their internet services to allow third-party developers to have access to such deep integrations. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. You should probably check it out. Let's see. I'll try to find that link real quick, but go on.
So we have a page on our site, an article we wrote that a person named David Silverberg wrote on our site about this differential privacy and said that Aaron Roth, you know, the privacy researcher from UPenn came. He said that they were groundbreaking efforts and that Apple is the clear privacy leader. And that was in the keynote. And it's that kind of thing where someone whose field is this says that what Apple's doing is pushing the boundaries forward is reassuring. You know, it's why I don't use an Android device frequently, if at all, because I value that kind of respect for the privacy. And we were talking about that earlier with Matt about how that extends to everything, whether it's the file system that does file level encryption to, you know, this example in messages.
Right. Well, for reference, the session was hosted by Ivan Kristic, who's Apple's iOS security guru. To your point of differential privacy, it's kind of interesting. I mean, Apple's trying to work out how to obtain the same kind of information on trends and user trends and anonymized data, all kinds of stuff that Google has, you know, been so good at accumulating. Of course, they do it non-anonymized, or very.
It's easy to accumulate it when it's not anonymized.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're trying to match that technology or that level of insight with safe protocol, or what they say is relatively safe data gathering. Like, but as I've said before, I'm not one that is super concerned about companies knowing my habits or, you know, getting data. It's not like I opt into stuff like that, but I don't actively.
You don't concern yourself with this like some users do.
Yeah. I mean, if we really get down to it, I don't have a lot of sensitive data going back and forth across the web.
Well, here's the thing, right? It's not that one piece is sensitive. It's that all of this in aggregate explains a very clear picture of who you are.
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay.
Because for me, I'm using the internet, right? I'm on a Google service. I want that service to work as best as possible. And whether it's Google, Apple, Microsoft, whoever.
I'm a little more concerned because we know that former CIA and National Security Administration Director Michael Hayden used to say that, you know, what was his direct quote? He said that at when he quoted Counsel Stuart Baker at a recent debate in Johns Hopkins University, you know, he raised the point saying we kill people based on metadata. Mm-hmm. And, you know, metadata is this little bit of data around your actual content data, right? The fact that you called someone for 30 minutes, the fact that you searched for these terms on the internet, for all of these kinds of things. And that in aggregate forms a picture of who you are and what you do. Right. And when government agencies use that to target you or to target someone and find someone with a match for that kind of profile based on that metadata and yours aligns with it, that's creepy scary.
So are we talking about – I mean it's a whole – it's a conflation of different issues. I mean it's
a conflation. It is a conflation of different issues, but it is – that's kind of the thing is that, you know, if Google services are subject to those kinds of searches and they had to harden their stuff so that they wouldn't be subject to man-in-the-middle attacks and kinds of things like SSL spoofing and other stuff that we found out was being done. Even if it's innocuous data to you, I am very much pleased that Apple is taking this stance and trying to secure it.
What do you have to hide, Victor?
Why do you care? None of your business what I do or don't have to hide.
It is all of my business.
No, it's not. Yeah. Go fish.
The government surveillance angle is obviously troubling.
Well, we've already seen it's a real problem, not a hypothetical problem, right?
Well, I think it's more than a hypothetical problem, but I don't know. I don't know who does it fall on though. I mean, are you going to suspend your own creature comforts and your own access to, you know, really great technology just because of, you know, something the government is perhaps sloppily implementing?
I make choices about things like that, and I don't have to worry about suspending my use of really great technology when there are technologies that are really great and work to preserve my privacy.
Except that technology is slow coming if you're sticking with one platform.
You can pick good, fast, or cheap. And of those good, fast, or cheap, you get two. Mm. It can be good and cheap, but it's not going to be fast. It can be good and fast, but it won't be cheap.
What about cheap and fast?
It won't be any good.
Indeed.
What was one of the other things in the keynote that you were interested in?
I didn't really get to take a second look at it, but on the from what I remember from the live stream, which I was writing half the time, so I didn't really get to pay close attention as I would have liked. But all the Apple Watch improvements, I feel made the device usable for a greater number of people.
Have you tried the beta for that yet?
I have. Yes, I have.
What do you think of it?
It's good. It's good. It's much more intuitive and it's less Apple forcing stuff on you than, you know, offering you a platform for which you can do it, things you want. So, for example, a really good example is the side button is no longer the contacts button, of course. Personally, I think I probably used the contacts button like three times, and that was within the first week of getting my watch, just trying it out, because messaging people on watch is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Unless they have, you know, if they have a watch, then it's kind of cool. You can, you know, you send it, you can use digital touch and stuff, but other than that, first, you know, once the novelty of that wore off, and a lot of my friends don't have watches, so Apple watches, that is. So I didn't really use the contacts button. But now that it invokes the dock, which is basically glances.
The app switching thing, which is called dock, which is strange to me.
Yeah. It's kind of like a, it's like a different, it's like a live glances kind of thing, or not live glances. It's like a live, yeah, it is like a live glances. So it's like a combination between an app glance and the full app, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like kind of like a compromise between those two. So it gives you the information, like a snapshot of it. But if you want more, you tap into it and you just go straight into the app from the dock. So I think that's much more useful than, you know, having a dedicated button for what was basically a single app, the messages app or messages slash phone combination app. I mean, do you use your watch now with, do you use it a lot to communicate with people, or do you use it mostly as a remote viewing device, or, you know, something like that?
Primarily use it as a, well, as activities, you know, the rings. I also use it to reply back to people. So if someone texts me or something like that, and I can tap yes or no, or use the mic, but using the mic and then having to say send as text instead of sending as audio is annoying.
Pretty excruciating experience.
Yeah, it is.
You're probably happy that they have the new activity faces, because that looks pretty, I mean, that also works very well.
Yeah, I was thinking the chronograph version of that is my answer.
Yeah, that one's pretty neat. I do like the full screen rings, though. It's pretty handy.
Yes, it is.
And it frees up space for other complications.
Yeah.
Which there are many of.
Well, I want you to keep trying the watch and report back to me, because I have not yet updated the watch. I did update the Apple TV.
Oh, I did not do that.
Oh, well, that was the easy one.
Yeah. Is it worth it to up? I mean, not worth it. Is it? Are the new features significant enough for me to tread into those dangerous waters?
Not yet, unless you have cable surfaces that you want to take advantage of single sign-on for, or some of these other things. You know, I changed the interface to dark right away, and I tried going for the new TV remote app, but I don't think I got the TV remote app to work because I'm not on iOS 10 on the phone yet.
Yeah, right.
And so I wasn't able to see the fancy new remote interface and use the phone as if it were Siri remote. But I think it's one of those things where it's all of these things for the TV come together. I mean, it wasn't that strong an update in some ways.
Right.
But
right. Well, obviously it wasn't as flashy as the iOS announcements.
Or the revamp of the whole watch.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was an easy one to do, and I'm thinking it's going to be a good one. You know, single sign-on was the biggest roadblock there. And the additional services on iOS Sling on tvOS is going to be a big deal, right? Because that allows you to bring that many more channels in.
Right, right.
So,
are you a Slinger?
Not as yet, but I'm gonna. I'm thinking I will.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it is. They're slowly creeping towards that goal. All they need now are the partnerships.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted to bring up here, and I don't know, did you read this article that we published about the accessibility address at DDC? One of the sessions with that Dan published.
With the what's her name?
Haben Girma.
Haben, yeah. Yes, I did.
Yeah, that really struck me as coming to the heart of what Apple's about. You know, and there were a couple of things about the keynote and this session that really got to me. And one of them was this session, because Apple has always had accessibility as one of its strong points, and it's reassuring to see that even in 2016 that they're bringing that forward. And you know, Girma talked about how Apple's work has really made the platform remove all the barriers for people. They've got VoiceOver for people who can't see the display, dynamic type for assisting users with low vision, captioning and videos to make them accessible for deaf users, and assistive devices that expose the interfaces for digital Braille.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't even honestly aware that digital Braille was available in iOS, but apparently it is.
I think. Well, I did. I don't know if you noticed. If you watch closely in WWDC, you can see a quick shot of her. She was in attendance at the keynote.
I saw the Braille keyboard in the front.
Yeah, she was using a screen reader to, obviously some sort of voice recognition dictation software connected to a screen reader to listen to all the announcements on Monday, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. She related an example, an experience that is really striking, right? She said that she was traveling to China and she discovered an unknown object in her hotel room that appeared to be a fruit. And rather than tasting it, because God knows what it is, right? She took a photo of it and sent it to a friend who told her the object is dragon fruit.
Now, dragon fruits.
Well, but she is vision impaired and hearing impaired, right?
Yep.
So she was only able to do that because the camera app is accessible with VoiceOver. And without considering VoiceOver, you know, because the developers could have easily said, why does a person who's visual and disabled need an accessible camera? Why would a blind person take pictures? But they did it anyway, and it totally came in handy. It totally worked.
Theories on a date when Apple is going to use their new computer vision technology with accessibility?
I know we are Apple Insider, and I know we talk about rumors a lot, and we're going to end up talking again about them, because even though we were entirely wrong about all of the hardware announcements for WWDC, let's say it. You know, we didn't have a display. We didn't get a MacBook Pro with a touch bar, although we saw hints of it in the release, the beta release that points to it being there, but we didn't get it.
Right? Yeah, we never really.
I'm not going to make the prediction about when we're going to get vision enhancement kind of things from them.
Yeah.
What I do want to mention, though, because this is one that really resonated with me. I have been trying to get my children to be interested in programming for a while.
Ooh.
You know, Hour of Code stuff they've done. Different apps like the Human Resource Experience app that came out recently and was on the App Store featured.
Right.
As ways of trying to interest them in doing this. And to be honest, they're not that interested, so I don't push so hard. But I like very much the idea of Swift Playgrounds.
Indeed. Yeah. When I saw that announced, I was like, oh my God, I want this now.
Well, not only do I want it because I want to learn it, I love it for my kids. And I like it for the idea that it has challenges built into it. And I like it for the idea that for years we've said, you know, people have said the iPad is not just a content viewing device, it's a content creation device, right?
Right.
And Apple said that the iPad is their vision of the future of computing. So I'm pretty much banking, right? Here's my rumor. Here's my expectation. My expectation is that years from now, the Mac goes away, mm-hmm. and that the kids raised on Swift Playgrounds and creating code in the iPad will be using some future version of iPad as their primary computing device.
Mm. It's kind of moving in, well,
how's that for
in that direction. Yeah, that's bold.
Yeah, I'm saying.
That's bold.
And what's nice about it is I've set it to be years out, so I can wait years to be wrong.
Years, potentially after I'm dead.
Well,
just
that,
in case.
That could be shorter than years.
It could be.
It's a little grim.
Never know.
Never know. What parting thought do you have? What's the biggest news out of this event that you see?
I guess if I take a step back, it's that Apple has returned WWDC to developers. It's no longer the consumer event that it has been for the past few years. They didn't announce any hardware. A lot of the stuff that they did announce was very developer focused, and they announced a lot of stuff that will very soon help devs create, you know, great products for consumer consumption. You can kind of see that with, mainstream coverage, slight disappointment at WWDC's lack of announcements. But there, you know, a lot of people misinterpret what this conference is all about.
Right. And it's turns out it's actually for the developers.
Yeah. Interesting that it's in the name.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm really, pleased that Tim Cook's gone back to Apple's roots with this year's WWDC. I think that's the biggest takeaway. You can just see it's for an example, how much time do they spend on Swift, right? At the end of the 2-hour long keynote, They spent quite a bit of time, and they also spent quite a bit of time just, you know, talking about Swift Playgrounds. Time that previously would have been spent talking about some, you know, throwaway iOS feature that is kind of flashy, you know, raises excitement for the general consumer. None of that.
My biggest disappointment out of this whole thing was so small. My biggest disappointment was that Craig Federighi said one more thing and then didn't deliver. He just happened to have to say something that he'd forgotten from his script.
Yeah.
If you're going to invoke those magic three words, you really have to invoke them.
Yeah, I'll cut him a break since he carried the entire keynote.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
What, you didn't like Bose?
I thought it was a bit...
You didn't like Bose getting up and doing the whole music demo?
It was kind of... I mean, it really went with the dev-focused theme, but it was kind of awkward and a bit cringy. But not because of what she was doing. It was because of expectations as to what the keynote is supposed to be.
No. Stop right there, because let me lay it out for you.
No, lay it out. Break it down.
You can have Eddie Q doing his karaoke shtick for one more year in a row, or you can have Bose, the woman that Apple hired away from PepsiCo's music group, where she was responsible for getting Beyonce into Super Bowl 47's halftime show.
Yeah.
This is a woman who knows her music up and down, backwards and forwards, has relationships with artists, and has pulled stuff off that you or I would not be able to do, and other people in her level. You know, well, I take that back. There aren't that many people at her level.
Yeah.
For her to present music to us in that way was freaking awesome. And I want more of it.
She's a music nerd. And
she's fantastic.
And it was great if you go into WWDC keynote expecting what that conference is supposed to be. It's a conference for nerds by nerds, and it's great.
But if you're going into it, she's a music nerd, as you said, so she fits right in there. Yeah. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a bit cringe. If you're looking at it, you know, from the standpoint of this is a product, release kind of celebration or something, you know, for consumers by Apple, then it comes off a bit differently. But I think if you view it in the right light, it was good.
Well,
that's my take.
Fantastic. Where can people find you on the internet, Mikey Campbell?
At Twitter, Mikey Campbell 81, and on Apple Insider. Of course.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this week of the Apple Insider podcast. And if you view Mikey Campbell in just the right light, it's not cringeworthy at all. I'm Victor Marks. We'll see you next week on the Apple Insider podcast.